What was the most important thing you learned this morning? If any.
Myla, stand up at that microphone, tell us something. And then Jay, you're next.
I want to hear from the campus folk also.
Tony. Go.
What's your name?
Myla.
Myla.
Yeah, having genuine concern for people. In fact, we're going to have our strategic planning tomorrow. So I'm thinking of putting an additional activity for that.
Oh, wonderful. Very good. Okay.
Jay, run on down. Come on.
Genuine concern for people.
Yeah. Okay, I learned everyone needs a self-affirmation box, even though if your strength finder's theme is self-assurance.
Yeah. For me, so, the activity about how well you know the person. So there are things that I can't answer because I really don't know my team.
Yeah, Tony was sharing at lunch. He said, you know, I couldn't put anything in the box because I didn't know these people.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's bad. And I know.
At least you know their names.
Now, I know their names. And I know. And now I know what to do next.
Very good. Yeah. Very good. Thank you, Tony.
Nice, Tony.
Sure.
I learned that to influence people, you first have to know them, get into their lives as well. Not naman yung pakilamero, no? I mean, but really relate with them. Relating with them is very important. So, not to come as commanding or just to elicit commitment because of your position. Compliance because of your position, but commitment because of who you are to them. So,
people respond differently. Open up at different rates. Some people open up right away. Some people take a lot of time. And some people open up openly, and some people open up subtly. For all you know, somebody's opening up to you, and you're not catching it. So people are different, and we'll learn about that this afternoon. Anyone else? Yes?
About being intentional in building relationships.
Being intentional in building relationships. Lynn?
I have to be willing to suffer a lot of mess.
I have news for you. Your people suffer your mess. Boy, when I heard that about me, I said, wow, even now I'm getting goose pimples. I have made a mess, a lot of mess, and my people suffer my mess. So why should I not suffer their mess? Okay, we're on the home stretch. So you're making some structural things in place. You're cultivating managerial competence. You've become a person or trying to become a person of influence, not just one of authority. You're beginning to mentor and coach and struggling to empower your people. We now go to step number 5, which is cultivate the right attitudes to engender a team culture. Okay? And let me go to the end very quickly. You need a team culture because you can't do it alone. Okay? And culture, and you'll find out later, is like an invisible supervisor. If you build the right culture, you don't have to supervise everyone all the time because the culture will do it for you. Okay? The whole team becomes its own supervisor. Okay? So you want to engender or to bring to life a team culture, and you do that by cultivating the right attitudes, okay? Chuck Swindoll said, life is 10% what happens to me, and 90% what? How I react to it. Viktor Frankl, Nazi concentration camp survivor, said, when we cannot change the situation, we are forced to change ourselves. Choosing one's attitude in any given situation is the last of one's freedoms. Zig Ziglar said, and it's not in your workbook, attitude, not aptitude, determines altitude. Your attitude, not your competency, will determine how far you will go. I'm not sure I buy into that completely, but I certainly believe attitude has a lot to do with being successful with people. I mean, you need competency as well. You can have a great attitude. If you're incompetent, you will be a wonderfully incompetent person. And you could be very competent. If you have a poor attitude, your competency will not help you. So you need both. You need both. Cultivating the right attitude helps you sustain a caring leadership style, which drives a good team culture. A manager leader needs a good attitude in three areas. Number one, self. Number two, others. And number three, life in general. We will talk about number one and number two, because if you get that right, number three follows. I don't have the exact percentage, but I think 99% of life is about relationships. So if you get attitude about yourself correct and attitude towards others correct, life, your attitude towards life will follow. Okay? So let's take self. What is your attitude towards yourself? Do you like yourself? Well, some people don't. You see, you look in the mirror in the morning, and for men, and it's not exactly Brad Pitt. So what do? Well, you know, you make the most of it, right? You see, you have to like the person in the mirror, because God loves that person in the mirror, okay? So let me give you a self-appraisal exercise. I will ask you to rate yourself in four areas, okay? In a scale of 10. One being the lowest, 10 being the highest, okay? It's not there in your workbook, right? You are too workaholic. You want to get ahead of your teacher, okay? And I'm trying to get your attention. Okay? I will ask you four questions. And in each question, you have to rate yourself. One is the lowest, 10 is the highest. It'll be very fast. I don't want you to overthink, because I want you to tell yourself the truth. If you overthink, you're going to make yourself look good to yourself. Okay? So, rating number one. I want you to rate yourself. Rating number one. Rate yourself as a financial provider. Okay? This means, are you making enough money to feed yourself? To pay the rent? If you're married, are you making enough money to provide for your family's needs? Rate yourself as a financial provider. One, you're smooching. You're depending on other people. 10, you can help other people because you have extra money. So, rate yourself as a financial provider, okay? Just one number. No copying from your seatmate. And this will not be very personal. This will not be shared with anyone. Number two, rate yourself as a pastor, missionary, admin employee. One is the lowest, 10 is the highest. One, you should be fired. 10, you should probably head your ministry or department. Where are you? Rate yourself as a missionary, pastor, admin worker. Number three, rate yourself as a citizen of the country. How well you obey its laws, traffic laws especially. One, you should be deported. And 10, you should run for president, okay? Where are you? Rate yourself as a citizen of the country. And lastly, Rate yourself as a person. Okay? Rate yourself as a person. Just one number. One being, you probably should not have been born. I'm just joking. And then you are the template of humanity. Okay?
I like
that. Okay, now, you're finished, right? I want you to look at your ratings. I'll tell you what psychologists say. Psychologists say the last rating should be the highest. As a matter of fact, the last rating should be 10. As a matter of fact, if it is not a 10, will you kindly revisit your score and make it a 10? I'm ordering you to do it right now. Come on, put a 10. You can put a question mark if you like, but put a 10, okay? Listen carefully. The reason is this. The first three ratings are ratings on performance. The last rating is a rating of value. Okay? You perform to provide financially. You perform to become a good missionary, pastor, admin worker. You perform to become a good citizen. But personhood, you don't need to perform. By virtue of you being a person, you're a 10. It's a rating of value. It's a reflection of how you value yourself. Okay? So, dare I ask how many people rated themselves a 10? Okay, good. And some of you, like most people, are thinking of personhood as a performance. And the reason why we go through this is very, very important. If you do not see yourself as a 10, there is no way you will see others as 10s. And when we're dealing with the development of a skill to manage people, let's get first things first correct. You're a person, and you're valuable. You are made in the image of God. And the other people you work with, no matter what you feel about them, they're persons too. They too were made in the image of God. Okay? I do this in public seminars, and not everyone is a Christian. And I was challenged one day. Somebody said, oh, Alex, you're probably a Christian. That's a Christian perspective. I say, well, first of all, let's get the Christian perspective correct. I know I'm a 10, and I know others are a 10 because of John 3:16. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever will believe in him will not perish but have eternal life. I mean, how better a 10 can I be if God died for me? And so after I said that, a participant challenged me. He said, what about people who don't believe in your God? And I was kind of taken aback, but you see, the Holy Spirit, he loves me. So he gave me an idea. I said, let me give you a non-Christian test. We're in a ship that is sinking. We are fortunate. The whole class got into a huge lifeboat. The lifeboat can contain 100 people. There are only 60 people. There is space for 40 more people. We see hundreds of people swimming. And they will drown once they get tired of swimming. We cannot accommodate all of them. We can only accommodate 40. Who do we choose? What criteria do you use? What's the answer? It's a tough question. Look at your options. You cannot not save anybody. You gotta save 40 people, okay? You're not obligated to save 41 people because you will risk the 100 people That's pretty clear to me. Okay? I must save 40. I'm not obligated to save 41. Because once we are 100, you add one more, we sink. So that's very clear to me. So who do I save? So he looked at me, he said, children and women first. Okay, let me make it tougher. Let's say there are no children and no women. Then he goes, okay, actually it was a girl. She goes, okay, what about people who are, I'll say people younger than me. Well, first of all, you're assuming you can interview everybody and ask them how old they are while they're, treading in the sea. But let's even pretend that. So let me make the choice even tougher. Let's say we are all of the same age. And all of those people in the water are of exactly the same age. Who will you save? And I knew I had her in the corner. And I said, isn't it? You will save the nearest one. Up to the farthest one until you get to 40. Because they're all tens. They're all people. And as difficult as it is that, you know, once you save 40, you will not save the others, you have no choice. But you have peace that you will do the right thing. Because they're all tens. And she said, you know what? I think you're right. So, you know, I had problems with me when I was a kid. Okay? My nose was too big. But then I heard a comedian, he said, you know what, hey, what's your problem? You take a deep breath, you're good for a week. That's the first time I laughed about my nose, and it was really funny. And it liberated me, okay? Now, unfortunately, my DNA is so strong, my wife has an infinitely nicer nose than me. But my DNA is so strong, all my children got my nose. And of all people, my daughter, her nose is a carbon copy of mine. I said, honey, look at me. Look at Dad. I mean, I have lived not a bad life, no? So I said, don't worry. Don't worry. You'll be fine. She was in an interview once with McCann Erickson, who was at the agency of Del Monte for many years. And so she was sitting there with Emily Abrera, the CEO, and Maricel Pangilinan, elder sister of Anthony Pangilinan, who was the management account in my account, walked in, and she saw Stephanie right there. Without knowing who she was, Maricel said, I know that nose. I said, Maricel, of all the things you had to say to my daughter, I mean, my daughter says that I can go anywhere and people will know I'm your daughter. You know what? I realize, hey, it's not about your body. Okay? And you have to deal with it. And when I became a Christian, I said, Lord, amazing. I mean, you died for me, nose and all. So, hey, get comfortable. Don't feel guilty if you love yourself. Nothing wrong with that. Do you realize you are ordered to do that? Love yourself as you love your neighbor. That's an order. God didn't say love your neighbor more than you love yourself. God said, hey, love your neighbor as yourself. In other words, there's nothing wrong with loving you. Even I love you, sabi ni God. So you can't be too bad. So get that straight, because, folks, unless you understand you're a 10 and wonderful in the eyes of God, there is no way you will consider others as 10s. And somehow that will affect the way you relate with them. You know, if you consider yourself a 10 and develop that deep confidence because of God's love for you, there's something happens to you, people will begin to say, yeah, there's something about this guy, I just want to spend time with him. I just want to spend time with this girl. It's nice. It's just nice. How come you hang around with that person all the time? Lalang, it's, I don't know. It's just nice. Well, that's the Holy Spirit working through you because you are freed from your own insecurities and inadequacies, okay? So first things first, have a proper attitude about yourself. Do not look at yourself any lower than God looks at you. Oh, by the way, don't make no mistake about it. God knows you're a sinner, just like I am a sinner. But you see, because of the blood of Christ, he looks at you in absolute purity because of Jesus. And I think that's the winsomeness of Christianity, that sometimes we mess up because of our own attitude, bad attitudes about ourselves, okay? So get the attitude about yourself right, so that you get the attitude about others correct. On the other hand, don't go above God's estimate of you, okay? That is a problem too, okay? I mean, you know, if by the time we're finished and your head is so swollen, you won't be able to fit the exit, I mean, that's a problem too. So you need to be, sabi ni God, don't look at yourself any higher or lower than what you are, okay? So, question. What about your attitude towards others? There's another self-appraisal. Okay, this is a seminar on self-appraisals, actually. Because we need to see ourselves in the mirror. A self-appraisal is a mirror. Do that for me. Mark the appropriate box to score yourself on the questions using the following scale. 1 is never. 2 is sometimes. 3 is frequently. 4 is always. Okay, will you do that? I'll give you 2 minutes initially. Go. Okay, you need to work on areas where you get scores of 1s and 2s. Okay, scores of 1s and 2s. I was running this a leadership seminar for a technology company. There were 13 people in the room. They were all top-level people. 12 were country managers of 12 Asia-Pacific countries. The 13th was the vice president for Asia-Pacific. It is a computer company. And we were in Tagaytay. In fact, we were in the Highlands rest house of former Arab, President Arab. And I looked at that living room with this grand piano and I looked around, I told myself, if the walls can speak, what stories they can tell. And we were doing the survey, and one guy raised his hand, Malaysian Chinese. He said, Alex, how do you develop a positive attitude towards others? Now, if you're a seasoned facilitator, you understand the question. What he means is, I have a negative attitude towards others, okay? And so I let him off the hook, and I said, I'll tell you what blocks a positive attitude towards others. And it was right there. I forgive slights rather than hold a grudge, okay? If you score a 1 there, that means you don't want to forgive people. And what happens is, if you don't want to forgive people, your heart hardens. And if you insist on not forgiving people, the hardness turns into bitterness. And what happens is, it defiles all other relationships. For example, let's say, example only, this group offended me. And I was so hurt, I vowed never to speak with them again. And I carry this grudge for a long time. Then I join this group. And it's fine initially. But later on, I say, wait a minute. These guys look like them. Because they're people too. But at which point, I'm already bitter. And so I look at people with bitterness. See, if you allow unforgiveness, hardness of heart to fester, it deteriorates into bitterness. And believe it or not, whether you are aware of it or not, it will defile the way you look at all other relationships. Okay? Some people carry grudges to their death. And it's terrible. Okay? He raised his hand again. He said, okay, who can forgive? How do you forgive? So I said, you know what? Okay, I'll deal with it. I said, tonight, in the privacy of your log cabin room, write down all the people who have offended you from the time you can remember. Okay, the bully in grade school, the whoever, even your father, your parents, and then their offenses. Detail it as much as you can. And he said, Alex, I will need a lot of paper. I said, fine. Let's say I do it. He said, what do I do with it? Well, I said, look at them, and one by one, there's a principle in psychology. If you can't feel it, you won't heal it. Revisit the hurt and say, yeah, I remember. This guy really offended me. Revisit it. Revisit the core of the hurt. And then say, but I forgive you. I release you. Then go to the next offense and the next offender. Revisit the hurt again. Remember how hurt you were. And then say it again. But I forgive you. And I release you. He looked at me like I was from another planet. He said, Alex, who can ever forgive? And you know what? I'm not supposed to do it because it's a public seminar. But to me, it was an opportunity for the gospel. So I gave it to him. I said, you know what? The only answer I have for you is from my Christian faith. Now, the vice president was briefed me through his representative that you cannot talk religion because we're a secular company. I said, fine. So I looked at the vice president. I said, I can't answer his question unless I talk religion. And he said, go ahead, Alex. I want to hear the answer also. Okay? And so I said, you know what? In my faith, I am a sinner. I have offended God. And I have asked for his forgiveness. God has forgiven me because his son died for me. The penalty of sin is death, which is separation from God. God, I have offended with my sin. We call it sin, and it's an offense against God, but God has forgiven me by making his son die for the penalty of my sin. And so we believe that because Jesus died for us, we are forgiven. We actually feel forgiven. And because we walk around sinners who have been forgiven, we are able to forgive. I thought he was going to step out and say, what kind of nonsense is this? He told me, literally, he said, where'd you learn this? I said, from my pastor. And he said, can you give me his number? That's really what he said. And so, anyway, you know, ask yourself the question. Are you harboring a grudge? You know, the Bible says harboring. The picture is so accurate. You know, Manila Bay is a harbor. You protect the ships from getting destroyed. When we harbor a grudge, we're nurturing it. Dinidilig natin yan. We're cultivating the grudge. We want it alive. We don't want to forget. We want it fresh. You know, and we relish reliving it. Because we relish hating that person again and again and again. And you know what? Whether you are aware of it or not, ladies especially, it's going to show in your face. Yes. And the best beauty secret on earth is a heart of forgiveness. Yes. It will relax you. You're going to look prettier. You're going to look younger. And by the way, you're going to look more winsome as a servant of God. All right. Continue, Daya. I think you need a 10-minute break. Yes, Joe, one question. Sorry? 2:30. Oh, 2:30. I'm sorry. No wonder. I'm saying, wow. Have I been talking so much? Okay.
Or 2:20. I like how you said, can you repeat that? If you can't feel it, what was that?
If you can't feel it, you won't heal it.
You won't heal it.
You cannot ignore. Kasi ganito yan, God is so wise. If I'm hurt, I can't ignore it. I must deal with it. I must forgive. To forgive, I must acknowledge na, you know, you really hurt me. And I'm telling you, I am pissed, and I think you're a blah, blah, blah. You know, you have to visit the core of your hurt. You can't pretend you were not hurt. Okay? Because even God's going to laugh at you. Right. I mean, he's going to say, come on, I know you're hurt. I saw it. Right. And I see your heart. Unless you acknowledge it and then say, because you have forgiven me, I forgive. You know what? As a retiree, I've had wonderful quiet times with the Lord. And I'm ashamed to tell you, I had better quiet time when I was an active pastor now than when I was an active pastor. And if that was the only blessing I got out of retirement, it's the greatest thing I've ever done in my life. You know, I sit down and I say, Lord, wow, you are weird. Because I have offended you so deeply. But your grace, just it's you pour it out in spades. And when you internalize that, you're going to be so ashamed. I cannot not forgive. Sometimes I tell the Lord, Lord, I really want to hate that guy. I mean, I can't hide my heart. I really want to hate that person. But you don't want me to. So you got to help me. Remove this hatred. Remove this bitterness from me. You know, God is so faithful. He knows your heart. And you will heal. You cannot ignore your hurts, folks. Okay? You will never heal. You have to revisit it and acknowledge it in humility that you are hurt, that you need help from the Holy Spirit. Okay, if you have a good attitude about yourself. Yes, Joe, sorry. Yeah. Sorry. It's usually only one question per customer, but that's all right.
Thank you. I just like that a lot, what you're saying. Because what we often encounter in Filipino culture, the way we deal with offenses is okay na yun eh. Alam mo yun.
Sweep it under the rug.
Even children, when we minister to students who have been deeply wounded by their family members, and parang you wonder na, how is that? Did anyone ever deal with that? Did anyone ever apologize? Did anyone even say that was wrong? And they say, no, okay lang. I mean, you just deal with it. And then they wonder why the symptoms of the hurt are still there. So, galing lang sinabi ng pagkasabi. You have to feel it first.
The symptoms will be there forever until you deal with it. I mean, husband and wife, okay? There are issues that are buried. And they are called unresolved issues. Okay? And this is for married people. Then you wonder why your wife doesn't want to have sex with you. Or why the intimacy is not as good as before. There might be unresolved issues, and they will surface in the weirdest manifestation. And so my wife and I, we counsel a lot of married people. And we, you know, one of the questions we ask is, are there any unresolved issues? And a lot of people don't want to address issues. And I mean, just like in strategic planning, if you don't get to the root issue, you're not going to address anything, you see. So in people management, you have to be transparent, first of all, with God. And it will really help you. As a person, it will really help you. And folks, let me tell you, you're not going to hide it. It's going to show in your face. you can have a Colgate smile all day if you want, and you'll get cramps of the jaw. But you're not going to hide it. Because people who know you will sense it. Okay? All right. Okay, now. You have a good attitude about yourself. Good attitude about others. You need to learn collaboration. Focus on collaboration and not combat. And seek win-win solutions. Because conflict is inevitable, but combat is optional. Let me repeat that. Conflict is inevitable, but combat is optional. Differences are inevitable because people are different, but you don't have to fight. Okay? Everyone, please stand up and get a partner. Anyone. This is both trying to wake you up and trying to teach you a lesson. Okay? Everybody has a partner? Okay, do best of three, Jack and Poi. Best of three. Go. Okay, winners. Winners. Okay. Winners. Okay. Face your partner. Daniel, tapos na kayo? Yeah. Yung iba, kinarir. Tapos na ba? Okay. Winners, all winners, I want you to face your partner and fold your arms like this. Face your partner and fold your arms like this. Okay? Now, the non-winners, I want you within 6 seconds to attempt to unfold your partner's arms using any means except violence. 6 seconds. Try to unfold your partner's arms using any means except violence. Ready, go. Time's up, time's up, time's up. Okay. Time's up. Okay. Now, who, can I have your attention? Who among you were able to unfold your partner's, okay, what did you do? You what?
I strategize.
Okay, tickling is manipulation. That doesn't work. God, what did you do? No, it's a form of violence. What did you do? Tickling? No, doesn't work.
Just asked me to unfold.
Ah, ask you, very good. Lynn, you asked? You said please? Very good. Anyone else? And you agreed. Okay. Give these guys a big hand. Everybody sit down. Believe it or not, that was a test of your leadership. The ability to influence people. Some people in some workshops, they get a pocket, their wallet, and say, 100. Now, that can work. That can work. But the problem is if you use financial incentives to buy influence, the cost goes up. Some people tickle. That's manipulation. Can you influence people through manipulation? Yes. But is it a good long-term strategy? Because pretty soon, the people you're manipulating will get onto you. And you won't be able to manipulate them anymore. The best way is to ask. Okay, let me ask you a question. Why did you not just ask? Why didn't you ask? Yeah, just hold that question. I'm going to ask now the people whose arms were folded. Okay? Why did you not want to unfold your arms?
He didn't ask.
Okay, but he was trying. Sure. Bingo. In my mind, it was combat. Who thought? I said, get a partner. P-A-R-T-N-E. I didn't say get a competitor. I said, get a partner. That's your partner. But you see, we are wired for combat. Are you with me?
Yeah.
See? I just want you to be aware. Because if you're aware, you can address it. If you're unaware, you'll never solve it. How can you solve a problem you're not aware of? You must understand you and I are born with combat DNA. And so we must intentionally fight to become non-combative, to seek win-win solutions. Okay? See, the people whose arms were folded automatically said, ah, this is win-lose. Who told you it's win-lose? That's your partner. And they win-lose. No, no, no. Why should I? Who are you anyway? But you see, no one told you that. Did I tell you not to unfold your arms? No. See, human beings all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. You know, we are combative, and we must fight that tendency. Next. Learn to ask for forgiveness. And, by the way, learn to forgive. We're talking about people management. We're talking about developing a team culture. The culture that you want to develop in your team is one of humility. Okay? To have teammanship, every member of the team must be humble. Humble enough to realize, I need my teammate. I can't do it alone. And so we must move together. A culture of humility. And humility is tested by offenses. Okay? Some of you may have heard this. When I was senior vice president, the person that I bumped with all the time, I fought with all the time, was the VP for HR. I don't know why. His name's Jimmy. I hated his guts and he hated mine. Okay. One day I became president. And so I said, aha. I was now Jimmy's boss. This is my chance. Okay. Jimmy being a good, by the way, of all the people, we had 5,800 employees. And as president, if there was one vice president that you had to have a good relationship with, I figure it had better be the HR VP. Because he handled labor relations, he handled all sorts of benefits and salaries, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, as a Christian, I also wanted to give a good testimony as a leader. And so the first person I called in to my office on the first day of my being president was Jimmy. And Jimmy, being the great politician that he is, Filipinos are wonderful politicians. We know our politics, don't we? Jimmy walks in, he says, good morning, boss. Congratulations on your promotion. In my heart, I said, yeah, right. I said, but after that, I said, Jimmy. So Jimmy sits down in the visitor's chair, and I decide to, you know, that's where the mere mortals sit. So I get off my throne, my executive throne, and sit myself beside this mere mortal here. Okay? And I started by saying, Jimmy, I need your help. Of course, Alex, you have my full support. Yeah. Politics, politics, politics. At least he's playing his cards right. Yeah. I said, Jimmy, I know we have not gotten along well before. Quiet. In fact, Jimmy, I know I have offended you. Silence. And so I looked at Jimmy. I said, Jimmy, will you forgive me? And Jimmy, like a true red-blooded guy, said, So I said, okay, I knew I was forgiven. Because whenever men mumble, they mean yes. I mean, basically he was saying, can we please, get out of this awkward situation, you know? But you know what? Jimmy and I became like this. And we found out, working together, why we were fighting all the time. Because we were exactly alike. We were passionate, principled individuals. I never saw that side of Jimmy. I saw the bad side of Jimmy. See? And Jimmy worked very hard. And because of his efforts, together with the help of the other executives, Del Monte was awarded Employer of the Year in 2003 or 4, 3. It was the third Employer of the Year award for Del Monte, the only company in the country, in the history of this award, to be awarded 3 times. Wow. I mean, it's not San Miguel, it's not PLDT, it's not the usual suspects. Del Monte, 3-time Employer of the Year awardee. Wow. And that was Jimmy. See, when you humble yourself, you remember what I told you? No power on earth other than the power of God himself, than leadership humility to elicit commitment from people. Jimmy committed to me. And you know what? A professional commitment turned into a personal commitment, and we became friends. And you know what? Jimmy would call me. He'd say, hey, Alex, I've missed you. Let's have coffee. I mean, he's not gay. You know, but that's how we are. See, buddy, I missed you already. Let's have coffee. We live in the same area, so we'd have coffee. I mean, male affection is a wonderful thing. We're like this. Now, Jimmy, he's Opus Dei, and I've been praying for him for a long time. One day, his brother was dying. And his brother was also an old-time Del Monte employee. And he said, Alex, will you pray for Eddie? Eddie's dying. I said, Jimmy, what do you want me to pray for? Pare, Bahala ka na. So I said, Jimmy, is he terminal? He said, yes. Is he suffering? He said, yes. In fact, if God will take him home, we'll be happy. I said, okay, let me pray. Let's pray now. So sa telepono. So I prayed. I prayed a gospel prayer. And Lord, I said, I'm sharing the gospel for Eddie, but it's Jimmy who's hearing it, so you work on him. I don't know if Jimmy accepted the Lord on that phone conversation. But what I'm telling you is this. An act of humility, an act of forgiveness. In this case, I was asking for forgiveness. Not only developed the relationship, not only elicited commitment from this person, but he found my faith attractive, you see. Such that here's an Opus Dei guy asking this weird evangelical person to pray for his brother. Okay? So, learn to ask for forgiveness and learn to forgive. In 1987, the Lord blessed me with an Agora Award for marketing. Okay? So I'm an Agora awardee, and I had no idea how that happened. But the story is this. My boss was new. His name is George. You won't believe his family name. His family name is Error, as in mistake. That's his name, George Error. Okay? Anyway, I hope he's not, puking right now. George just landed, let's say, last week. The awards night was tonight. And so, Cory Aquino's time. Now, if you've been a marketing person all your life, an Agora Award is like an Oscar. Yes. Okay? I said, wow. So we were all there in the Intercon, and Cory was there, and all the companies were going up, the CEO and the marketing director. I was the marketing director. When Del Monte was called up as the Agora awardee, me as the Agora awardee, George went up, and he got the award and thanked everybody, and he didn't call me. I never got the award. The award of my life, my Oscar. my 15 minutes of fame. I didn't get it. And so everybody looked at me. They said, Alex, why did you go there? Well, you know, it's awkward. He's not calling me. Well, anyway, after the award ceremonies, there were picture taking. So the people literally dragged me to the stage because at this time I felt kind of hurt and weird and all that. So I still got my picture with Cory, okay? But I was hurting, man, I'm telling you. The next day, probably somebody told George, hey, George, you just blew it. Okay, you just got here, and you just blew it. So the president calls me into his office, okay? And so I sit down, and he says, Alex, you have the dumbest boss in the world. Okay, now that's how men apologize to one another, okay? And he said, I should have called you up the stage last night. He said, I didn't call you because I'm a dumb boss. Well, I wanted to say, yeah, you bet you are. But, you know, I forgave him. I forgave George. And George and I became like this. So what I'm trying to teach you is, you know, this forgiveness business, you know what? That's at the core of our relationship with God. And that is at the core of our relationship with one another. If you want a team culture, you better cultivate this forgiveness. I can write a book on my asking for forgiveness from my people who I have offended. I can write a book on how to offend people. Fortunately, I can write as long a book on how to ask for forgiveness for my offenses. I'm known as the president who asks for forgiveness because I make so many mistakes. Okay? You know, we had a sexual harassment issue. It wasn't a big deal. I mean, the sales manager had promo girls in a provincial trip, and he made a stupid remark. He said, hey, can I get a massage? And when I heard about that, I said, that is dumb. Now, the girl was a contractual, okay? She was not very ugly. She was not ugly at all, okay? And so when I heard about it, I was so angry. I said, how can we have a sexual harassment issue here? Her sister was a lawyer. And the lawyer was going to file a case against Del Monte. I said, oh, boy. So the sales director came to me. He said, Alex, what do we do? I said, okay, bring the guy here. His name is Dennis. Bring his boss and you. Let's meet. And I knew what to do. I said, okay. I told the guy, look, what happened? So he said, boss, I didn't touch her. But I did say those things. And I regret it. It's wrong. I said, good. You want to keep your job? He said, yes. Okay. Step number one. Tonight, I want you to go home and tell your wife and ask for her forgiveness. Tomorrow, I want you and your wife here. Because I want to bring, the girl was still working for Del Monte. I want you to apologize to the girl with your wife. And then tomorrow night, we're going to buy dinner for the sister, the mother, and this girl. And representing me will be the sales director, you and your wife. And the script will be like this. The sales director will tell the story that you regret what you did, you admit what you did is wrong, and you regret it. You have asked for your wife's forgiveness. Your wife, if she actually forgives you, will tell the group that she has forgiven you. And you will ask for forgiveness from the girl once again in the presence of her sister and her mother. And if that doesn't work, you lose your job. So, okay. The guy is a Christian. So, true enough, wife forgives him and he comes the next day and he doesn't look like he had been broken, you know, bruised and broken. The report I got after the dinner, in fact, it went so well. People were crying with one another. The sister, the lawyer, wrote me a letter. And I've been trying to look for it in my files. The letter went something like this. It said, Mr. Castillo, our family would like to thank you with the way you handled this situation. We will no longer file a case. And we admire the way Del Monte handled something like that. And thank you very much, blah, blah, blah. You know what? That sent a signal to everybody that, hey, that is the culture in this company. One of the sales managers abused one of the sales supervisors verbally, cursed him verbally in a meeting. When we heard about it, we got him, had him to apologize to the supervisor, and we suspended him without pay for 2 weeks. And he said, I can't take it. I'm going to quit. We told him, don't quit. Be a man. Take it on the chin because you committed a mistake. And so, you know, if you do this consistently, you send a signal. Hey, in this team, we're going to be humble. We're going to be asking for forgiveness from one another every time we offend one another. Because we will develop a team culture. We're in this together, and we insist on humility. We insist on frankness and transparency. Because that will be the culture. And I tell you, nothing is stronger than that kind of a culture in a group. So it starts with you. When I retired, one of the managers delivering these testimonials for me, she said, Alex, you are known as someone who asks for forgiveness, for our forgiveness every time you offend us. And she said, I have to confess to you. I struggle with that. And I know my team is waiting for me to humble myself to them. And he said, one of the legacies you are leaving with me is that ability to ask for forgiveness when you offend people. So that culture was propagated. Okay. Leadership becomes inspirational, in fact, when it is sacrificial. That's how you inspire people. You die. Humility is death. Not physically. But you die to your selfish agenda. And you sacrifice yourself in the service of others. And that's how you inspire people. To me, one of my best examples is Nelson Mandela. 27 years in an apartheid prison. He must have hated the white folk. But something happened to him in prison. And after the world pressured the government of South Africa to release him, he had been healed. He had forgiven his tormentors in prison. Such that when his party nominated him to be president, and he eventually won the presidency of South Africa, the first black person to become president of South Africa, rather than revenge, he instituted the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which was a venue for confession and forgiveness. Of course, some criminal activity was prosecuted. But generally, Nelson Mandela said, if we will avenge ourselves against our tormentors, we will not be any better than they are. He said, we must lift our country above our hatreds. And he led South Africa. Today, the survival of South Africa is directly attributed to the forgiving heart of Nelson Mandela. So, if you want to become, you still want to become a people manager, there's a lot of sacrifice there. It's like parenting, you know? I mean, your kids, sometimes I feel like they're sucking the blood from me. But it's like that. It's at the bottom is sacrifice. That's the appeal of Jesus. That's why we love Jesus. Because he died for us. And that's the appeal of Christianity. But in the method in which we lead people has to be the same. The contrast of Nelson Mandela is President Mugabe of Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, another white-ruled African country. But Zimbabwe is a mess because of the poor leadership of President Mugabe. Okay, I wonder if I have time. Probably. Maybe not. Why don't I give you a 10-minute break now, but we should come back at 10 minutes exactly from now?
An extra one.
All right. Okay. All right.
The Cardinals won, so give me a little extra time. Yeah, so 2:40.